Good evening. It is good to see everyone here tonight. Hope that you had a good Lord's Day afternoon, and we are thankful for your presence. Tonight's sermon is actually one that was requested by one of the young people, and I appreciate sermon requests, especially from the kids. Tonight, we are going to talk about dinosaurs. Now, that might seem like an odd topic for a sermon, but it's an important one for us to study because many people believe that there is a conflict between the existence of dinosaurs and what we are told in science. Atheists would have us believe that the two contradict each other. And so with that in mind, we're going to approach this study tonight. Now, what I'm going to do before we get into the important questions is I'm going to give you some background to this that is pertinent to lead us up to our modern day discussion. The story of dinosaurs for us begins in the year 1822 with a medical doctor in Oxford, England, who liked to collect fossils. His name was Gideon Mantell. He and his wife Mary made it their hobby to collect fossils together. On a spring day in 1822, Dr. Mantell had gone to see one of his patients, and his wife Mary had gone with him. And while he was tending to the patient, Mary went for a walk. And she found what appeared to be a giant tooth. She took this tooth back to her husband, but neither one of them had seen anything like this before. And so they went back to the site where she found it, and they started digging, and they found numerous other fossils similar to it. They had never seen anything like this, and so they took these bones and they sent them to a famous French scientist at that time, who was an expert on fossils. His name was Baron Cuvier. He guessed that these were the fossils or the bones of an ancient rhinoceros, that the bones were probably from sort of an extinct hippopotamus. Well, Dr. Mantell wasn't satisfied with that, and so he showed the fossil teeth to someone who was familiar with iguanas. His friend, the iguana expert, admitted that although the teeth were similar to the iguanas, they were much larger, but he said there was a striking resemblance. Dr. Mantell was convinced that he had found a new kind of an animal, a giant plant-eating reptile-like animal, and so he gave it a name. He called it Iguanodon, which means iguana tooth. About that same time, there was another individual who was discovering some bones of a huge meat-eating reptile-like creature, and he named this creature Megalosaurus, which means giant lizard. By the time you get to the year 1842, a lot of these type fossils were being found, and there was a British scientist, Sir Richard Owen. He was convinced that there was a whole tribe of these huge lizard-like reptiles that had existed in the past, and he named them dinosaur. Do you know what dinosaur means? Dinosaur means terrible lizard. Well, after that, excitement began, and two men, one named Othniel Marsh and the other named Edward Cope, they began a dinosaur war to see who could find the most and the best fossils. Well, a lot of years have passed since that, but people are still excited today about dinosaurs. Now, we're going to begin with the question tonight, and it is this. Did dinosaurs really exist? How many of you have seen the movie Jurassic Park? When you watch this movie and you see these dinosaurs that come out on the screen, these huge lizard-like creatures, are these just science fiction or did they really exist? You say, Don, of course they existed. But you know, early on after the discovery of these fossils, a lot of people rejected the idea. And it is amazing, there are still people around today who reject the idea that dinosaurs existed. In fact, I talked to a lady not long ago. She believes that dinosaurs are a concoction of the evolutionists just to draw us into their thinking. Well, what about that? It is certainly true that evolutionists have used and do use dinosaurs to promote evolution. From kindergarten all the way through graduate school, dinosaurs are used to indoctrinate people to, quote, the fact of organic evolution. Students are told that these huge creatures evolved from some ancient reptiles into what we know as birds. And a number of evolutionists have said that the study of dinosaurs when they were kids was a deciding factor for them, which made them eventually give up their belief in God and to accept the belief in organic evolution. Stephen Jay Gould, Robert Baker, and several others are on record saying that the study of dinosaurs at a young age is what set them on their lifelong path to be evolutionist. In fact, I know a man who's a member of the church. He says it is a waste of time to even seek to refute things like this. It's just nonsense to discuss this. But you know, when you read people making comments like this, it's not a waste of time. It's a necessity that we answer these things and deal with these things. But I think what happens sometimes is this. There are well-meaning people who argue that dinosaurs never existed, and the reason they do this is that they just don't know what to say. They don't know what the answer is. They don't know how to deal with the quote, scientific facts. But the fact of the matter is, there is overwhelming evidence that says dinosaurs did exist. There are huge numbers of dinosaur fossils of all different kinds that have been found. And Christians should not be afraid of the evidence. What is very interesting to me is that evolutionists speak about prehistoric man and about all the different phases of evolutionary man that we supposedly went through to get to the stage that we are currently, and there is virtually no fossil evidence. Now, with dinosaurs, there's tons of fossil evidence. With all of these supposed evolutionary man, there is virtually no fossil evidence. I heard one time, I think they said that if you took all of the supposed evolutionary man fossil evidence that we have, it could be placed in one coffin, some very, very small amount. It's not that way with dinosaurs. I think that says something about both of these issues. One is real and the other is not. Well, sometimes Christians want to know this. If dinosaurs are real, if they really existed, then why are they not mentioned in the Bible? Well, first, the word dinosaur wasn't even created until the year 1842. And so the English Bible goes back hundreds of years before that. And so you're not going to expect to find the word dinosaur in the Bible since the word dinosaur came after the English Bible. Secondly, there are a lot of animals that are we know exist that are not mentioned in the Bible. Can you think of any? Did you know that cats are not mentioned in the Bible? I find that offensive, being a cat lover. Now, I'm not talking about lions and tigers. Those are in the Bible, but domestic cats are not mentioned in the Bible. Kangaroos are not mentioned in the Bible. Bacteria are not mentioned in the Bible. That doesn't mean that they don't exist. Thirdly, the word dinosaur is not mentioned in the Bible, but there are certainly dinosaur-like creatures that are in the Bible. Now, we're going to begin tonight in Job chapter 40. There's one creature described in Job 40 that I believe is a dinosaur, another in Job 41, and we're going to read these two passages and we're going to discuss it. Job 40 and verse 15, the King James says, "Look now at the behemoth which I made along with you." He's speaking to Job. "He eats grass like an ox. See now, his strength is in his hips. His power is in his stomach muscles. He moves his tail like a cedar. The sinews of his thighs are tightly knit. His bones are like beams of bronze. His ribs are like bars of iron. He is the first of the ways of God. Only he who made him can bring near to him his sword. Surely the mountains yield food for him, and all the beasts of the field play there. He lies under the lotus trees in a covert of reeds and marsh. The lotus trees cover him with their shade. The willows by the brook surround him. Indeed, the river may rage, yet he is not disturbed. He is confident, though the Jordan gushes into his mouth, though he takes it in his eyes, or one pierces his nose with a snare." Now, I want you to listen to verse 15. Look at this. The word behemoth is used to describe him. This is the only time that this Hebrew word appears in the Bible, And there's been a lot of controversy over how to translate this word. Literally, this Hebrew word means kingly or giant beast. Strong's Greek and Hebrew dictionary says this, perhaps an extinct dinosaur. A Diplodocus or a Brachiosaurus, exact meaning is unknown. Some translate this as an elephant or a hippopotamus, but from the description of Job 40, 15 through 24, this is patently absurd. Now, some people have tried to read these verses, and they've tried to say this is an elephant. They've tried to say this is a hippopotamus. Let's read these verses again and see, does this fit the description of an elephant or a hippopotamus? Verse 17 says, he moves his tail like a cedar. That is like a cedar tree. Have you ever seen an elephant's tail? Does it look like a cedar tree? Now I'm going to show you one here. This is an elephant's tail. That is not a cedar tree. That is more like a twig. Now they say, well, it might be a hippopotamus. Well, here's a hippopotamus. You didn't think you'd see the rear end of a hippopotamus in the sermon, did you? Does that look like a cedar tree to you? This is not, I didn't pick good colors for this. I can see it's hard to see the words, but this is not a cedar tree. This is more like a stick. What about a dinosaur? You think about a dinosaur's tail. That's like a cedar tree. Does it fit better? The sinews of its stones are knit together. Verse 19 says, he is the chiefest of the ways of God. In other words, he's the biggest. He is the strongest. Does that fit an elephant? Does that fit a hippo? Look at this picture and see what you think. Verse 20 says, the mountains bring him food. That couldn't be a hippo because a hippo almost never leaves the river. In fact, this is a picture that I actually took myself when I was in Africa years ago. We were in a boat going down the Zambezi River to preach, and this hippopotamus raised up out of the river and roared at us, and it is a terrifying thing when the hippopotamus roars. But I got my camera out and I took a picture, but I'm telling you still, this is not the equivalent of what's being described in Job chapter 40. I think what Job 40 is describing is a dinosaur. I think that's why men today have such a hard time making it fit any animal that exists today, because there is no such animal that exists today. All right, look at Job 41. There is a creature described here called the Leviathan. What type of creature is this? Let's read it. Can you draw out Leviathan with a hook or snare his tongue with the line which you lower? Can you put a reed through his nose or pierce his jaw with a hook? Will you make any supplications? Will he make supplications to you? That is he going to beg you? Will he speak softly to you? Will he make a covenant with you? Will you take him as your servant forever? Will you play with him as a bird? Or will you leash him for your maidens? Will your companions make a banquet for him, of him? Will they apportion him among the merchants? Can you fill his skin with harpoons or his head with fishing spears? Lay your hand on him. Listen to what he says. And remember the battle and never do it again. You go up against this beast and he says, you're going to remember it. You're not going to do this again. Indeed, any hope of overcoming him is false. Shall one not be overwhelmed at the sight of him? No one is so fierce that he would dare stir him up. Now, verse 1 calls him Leviathan. This particular Hebrew word, according to Strong's Greek and Hebrew, says this word means Leviathan, sea monster, or dragon. I'm going to show you one person's rendition of this. It says, Strong says, large aquatic animal, perhaps an extinct dinosaur, plesiosaurus, exact meaning is unknown. Some think this to be a crocodile. But from the description in Job 41, 1 through 34, this is patently absurd. It appears to be a large fire-breathing animal of some sort. Just as the bombardier beetle has an explosion-producing mechanism, so the great sea dragon may have had an explosive-producing mechanism to be able to produce real fire from its breath. This particular Hebrew word appears at least 7 times in the Bible, and it is translated in the King James as dragon. Now listen to verses 18 through 21. His sneezings flash forth light, and his eyes are like the eyelids of morning. Out of his mouth go burning lights. Sparks of fire shoot out. Smoke goes out of his nostrils as from a boiling pot, and burning rushes. His breath kindles coals, and a flame goes out of his mouth. What's that sound like to you? I know what it sounds like to me. It sounds like a fire-breathing dragon. Now somebody says, that's ridiculous. See, the Bible's just a fairy tale. Some translations have a note that say this is a crocodile. How many of you have seen a crocodile that fits this description? You ever seen a fire-breathing crocodile? Some people would say that, a dinosaur-like creature who can breathe fire, that is just absolutely impossible. You're talking fairy tales. But you know, God has given us a lot of creatures that have amazing abilities. You think about the electric eel. What if 1,000 years from now, the electric eel was extinct and someone found it and they found writings that said, we used to have this creature that looked like a snake and it could produce electricity in its body. And if it touched you, it could shock you. It could kill its prey because it had this electrical ability. Or what if we had fireflies that were extinct, and we were told there were these bugs that could light up and burn a flame, burn a light inside of its body. Think about a skunk even. We know skunks so very well because we're familiar with them, but think about the fact, here's an animal that can produce a nauseous odor to repel its enemies. This particular creature that was referenced in Strong's, the bombardier beetle, has twin chambers in the rear of its body where it stores two chemicals, hydroquinone and hydrogen peroxide. When it is threatened, it squirts these two chemicals into two tubes in the rear of its body. In this tube, there are two enzymes that are added, catalase and peroxidase, and then a new chemical is formed. Anyway, a third, when this mixture takes place, a liquid and gas are combined, and it's instantly heated to 212 degrees Fahrenheit, and it expels this burning gas out of its rear end toward its enemy. Now, we know that exists. What if something like this existed on a larger scale? Or what if there was a flammable gas, and there was a dinosaur that could just grind its teeth to spark it? You know, when we have looked at the fossils of dinosaurs, there's one particular type of dinosaur that's been found that has a hollow chamber in its head that it's been speculated perhaps it was used for gases similar to what's being described here. I want to read you an excerpt from a book by Dr. Dwayne Gish. He says, the frequent references to dragons in the Bible, as well as in early records and traditions of most nations of antiquity, certainly cannot be shrugged off as mere fairy tales. Most probably, they represent memories of dinosaurs handed down from tribal ancestors who encountered them before they became extinct. It would be very hard to believe that so many people from so many different places could have come up with such similar stories and similar descriptions if such a thing never existed. All right, here's the next question. If dinosaurs did exist, the next question, of course, would be when and where. Now, what do the evolutionists say about this? Evolutionists would say that dinosaurs existed roughly 65 to 70 million years ago. They would say that man, of course, existed in some form or another 2 to 3 million years ago. And so how far apart does that put man and the dinosaurs? They would say about 65 million years apart. I want to tell you something. A person cannot believe the Bible and believe that. You can't. Why? Because Exodus chapter 20 and verse 11 says, in 6 days the Lord made heaven, the earth, the sea, and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day, wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. And so, when did the Lord make the birds? During the first 6 days. When did the Lord make the cows? During those 6 days. When did He make kangaroos? During the 6 days. When did God make man? During those 6 days. And so, did man and dinosaurs live on the earth together? They had to. They had to. Now, what we read in the book of Job, these creatures that we just read about, if these indeed are dinosaurs or dinosaur-like creatures, I don't know how they could be anything but dinosaurs. Consider what God said to Job. He says, Job, behold the behemoth. Now, what does that imply? That implies that this was a creature that Job was familiar with. Job knew about it. Job had seen it. In other words, Job lived on the earth the same time that the behemoth did, that the Leviathan did. I read an article by William Dankenbring. He wrote this: new evidence from the Paloxi Riverbed in Glen Rose, Texas, as well as from South America, Mexico, California, Armenia, demonstrates beyond any doubt that dinosaurs and mankind coexisted and walked the planet Earth at the same time. He says, believe it or not, dinosaur footprints and the footprints of man are found in the same strata, in the very same formation, in some cases only 18 inches apart, at a geological dig in Glen Rose, Texas, called the Paloxi Riverbed. In fact, I've included a few pictures here. I don't know how well you can see that, but you see where the arrow is pointing? I'm going to zoom in, and this is going to be, you can't even read the words there at all about where it is, but I'll share the slide with you if you want to see it. This is an outline of that particular cave drawing. Now look at this particular dinosaur. Don't those look remarkably similar to you? This is another. If you will look at it, you can see the outline of the dinosaur here. You can see these words a little bit better. These are dinosaur figurines that have been found in Mexico, all different types of dinosaurs. These are Inca stones from Peru, and there have been many thousands of these. Here's one that is zoomed in a little bit better so that you can see what this is. That looks like, maybe a Triceratops. And there have been, to date, over 11,000 of these stones that exist. A lot of them have dinosaurs on them. Folks, if we believe the Bible, we have to believe that dinosaurs and human beings existed together and at the same time. Now, the next question then is, where did they go? Where did the dinosaurs go? This might be the most puzzling question of them all. Reginald Dalle wrote a book in which he documented over 20 different theories or explanations of what happened to the dinosaurs. And since the time that he's written the book, a number of additional ideas have been put forth. I guess the most common idea is that some sort of tremendous climate change took place so that the dinosaurs could no longer live. When I was a kid, I remember them teaching us in school that a giant asteroid hit the earth and it threw up dust and soot and it blocked out the sun and it caused the plants to die off. And when the plants died, the plant eaters died, and then the meat eaters died. And it is because of this catastrophe that the dinosaurs are no longer alive. I believe, as most creationists do, that the death of the dinosaurs is mostly due to the flood of Noah's day. In fact, I'm going to go back to Genesis chapter 1, and I want to read you something. And this is theory, but I think that, and there are various theories, but I think this is worth considering. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 6, the Bible says this: then God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. Thus God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so. And God called the firmament heaven, and so the evening and the morning were the first or the second day. It is believed by many people that what is being described here is some sort of a water vapor canopy. That is, we had the earth, and then it was surrounded by water vapor, very thick water vapor, and that is the firmament that is above the earth. If that is what is being described, what effects would that have had on this planet? Well, for one, it would have created a tropical paradise on this earth, because as the rays of the sun came through this water vapor canopy, they would have been trapped. And as a result of this, we would have had tropical vegetation all around the earth in the Arctic and the Antarctic, which incidentally is what we have found the remains of, the fossils of. There would have been constant temperatures, warm temperatures, all over the earth, all the time. You know, in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 25, we're told about Adam and Eve, that they were both naked. The planet Venus has a canopy very similar to what we're describing. And I've read that the temperatures on that planet vary very little from pole to pole and throughout the planet and from day to night. If we had had something like this, there would have been no hydrologic cycle, that is, a rain cycle, because with a constant temperature, it would preclude rain. With a constant temperature, there would be no wind. Without wind, there would be no high flow of air from lower to higher pressure. And without that, we wouldn't have rain. Is that what we find? In Genesis chapter 2 and verse 5, the Bible says, "For the Lord had not caused it to rain on the earth, and there was no man to till the ground, but a mist went up from the earth and watered the whole face of the ground." If there was something like what is being described here, a water vapor canopy, it would have protected living organisms from short wavelength ultraviolet UV radiation. That is, when you go out on a sunny day and you have to put on your sunblock to protect you from the harmful effects of the sun, it would have filtered that. Ultraviolet radiation and certain solar particles harm cell structure. They harm DNA. Mutations result. It causes the aging of the skin. It causes skin cancer. Today we hear a lot of talk about the ozone layer and how it protects us and how we don't want to deplete the ozone. A water vapor canopy would have done what the ozone does, but it would have been a lot more effective. What would have been the effects of this? One of the things I was reading is, if you eliminate all of the negative effects that come from these ultraviolet rays, it would have resulted in longer lifespans. Is that what we see prior to the flood? Well, Adam lived 930 years. Methuselah lived 969 years. Genesis chapter 11, lifespans drastically start to decrease. Terah then lives 205 years. What about today? Man lives 70, 80, maybe 100 years if we live to be very old. Another effect would have been, with this warm tropical environment, there would have been lush forest all over the planet, grasses all over the planet. What have we found? We found coal in the Arctic regions. We found fossilized forests and palm leaves and poppies in the Arctic. Elephants and deer and bison and leopards in the Arctic and the Antarctic. Now somebody says, "Don, if this is true, if this is what the firmament means in Genesis, what happened to it?" Genesis chapter 7 and verse 11, during the flood, the Bible says, "All the fountains of the great deep were broken up, and the windows of heaven were open, and the rain was on the earth 40 days and 40 nights." It is believed, if this theory is correct, then what happened is when the windows of heaven opened, we're being told that this water vapor canopy rained out. Now, what would be the effects of that? If we had a water vapor canopy, it would have provided enough water to flood the earth. And then there would have been drastic climate changes on this earth. What was a lush, green, tropical environment would not be that way anymore. We would have extreme differences in temperature from the poles to the center of the earth. Probably furious winds, earthquake, massive erosion. If you have ever seen a local flood and seen the effects from that, imagine the damage that would have been done from a flood that covered the highest mountains. What would have happened to the dinosaurs? Many of the dinosaurs would have died during the flood. The dinosaurs that were on the ark, when they came off of the ark, would have found a remarkably different world than existed prior to the flood. When once food was easy to find, it wouldn't be easy to find because much of it would have died. Weather that used to be tropical, plant eaters would have had lush green food. That's going to be different now. The weather is going to be more hostile toward them. And so it is going to be just a short period of time, and dinosaurs are going to start to die off. Now somebody says, did you say dinosaurs on the ark? Some people will say dinosaurs could not have lived on the ark because dinosaurs are too big to fit on the ark. Noah's Ark, if you've ever been to the Creation Museum and you've seen the Ark was a large barge-like structure, 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, 45 feet high. No one can realize the dimensions of this and say it wasn't big enough. Calculations have been made that show that the Ark could have easily carried representatives of all of the different creatures and likely have been only half full. And on top of that, isn't it more reasonable to assume that he would have taken smaller dinosaurs, baby dinosaurs, instead of full-grown, the largest dinosaurs that you could find? Brethren, here's the point of the whole sermon. Christians don't need to be afraid of the evidence. The fossil evidence shows us that dinosaurs really did exist. The fossil evidence, however, is lacking, in fact, is non-existent for the, quote, evolutionary man. We can trust the evidence, but like the Bible, we've got to handle it accurately and honestly. I appreciate your attention tonight. As we close every sermon, I want to do tonight, and that is to extend the Lord's invitation to anyone who may be here tonight who needs to respond to it. Maybe you're here as a child of God, and maybe you've got sin in your life that needs to be taken care of publicly. Maybe you sin publicly, you want to make a public confession and ask us to pray on your behalf. We would be honored to do that. Maybe you're here tonight as one who needs to obey the gospel. The Bible teaches to become a Christian, a person needs to hear, believe, repent, confess, and be baptized. If we can assist you with that tonight, we would be delighted to do so. If you'd like to have a Bible study, let us know and we'll set that up and make that happen as well. Tonight, if you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, won't you come as together we stand and sing the invitation.